AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Tracking down flu virus, the timeline on the farm bill, progress at the Port of Baltimore, the path for corn-based ethanol to jet fuel, and tax cuts for the middle class. And we might have to talk about some markets with wheat trading higher again this morning. Let's get started. It is time for the free-for-all.
Live, we've got thunder, lightning. The way we broadcast is frightening. Be a Farm Journal broadcast. This is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all with panelists Jim Wiesmeyer and Paul Niefer, the Farm CPA. Directly following the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, welcome the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. Welcome to AgriTalk. Glad that you have decided to spend a little bit of time with us here on this Friday morning for the free-for-all. Wiesmeyer's on his way. Paul Niefer, for sure. We might have others stop by as the conversation continues. Dude, you're on the back side of the first round of the storms for today, aren't you?
We might be. We might be. Yeah. Still cloudy, still a little, you know, residual here going on, but we may be through the worst of it. It was nasty overnight, bro.
Right, right. Very little rain here in the overnight. Very little rain. As a matter of fact, it didn't rain until this morning. And there's rain in the area, but dude, this low pressure system from Central Manitoba? Yeah.
Yeah.
All the way down to North Carolina.
Wow.
And then there's the tail that goes all the way back into Central Texas, mm-hmm. where things are firing up right now. And as they fire up, these specks on the radar are turning into thunderstorm warnings as soon as they fire up. Mm-hmm. So this is it's going to be an active day. It's going to be an active weekend. Just stay aware of your surroundings as you head out there today. So, dude, everything good?
Everything is great. Everything is great. I've written some songs about yogurt for a very important and special reason, which I'm not going to tell you about. But it's very exciting.
Good.
That's what I'm excited about right
now. Good. Fantastic.
And it sounds weird. It'll make sense. Just you wait. Just you wait. Mm-hmm.
Right.
How about you?
All right.
You sound good.
I'm doing really good. I'm looking forward to the free-for-all. Wiesmeyer's on his way. Niefer is on his way. We've got a lot of ground that we need to cover. Let's go ahead and get started before we get Jennifer in.
Well, let's do start with the weather here. The National Weather Service weather outlook calls for an active weather pattern for much of the plains into the mid to upper Mississippi Valley regions. Thunderstorms to bring heavy rain, localized flash flooding, and severe weather to portions of the plains. An elevated to critical fire weather threat across the southern high plains. Cooler than average temperatures expected from the Rockies to the west coast and from the mid-Atlantic to the northeast, while much above average temps spread from the southern plains to the Great Lakes.
Yeah, by the time we get through this weekend into early next week, the temperatures are going to be warming up, and it's still going to be an active weather pattern, but boy, the temperature's a big difference.
Well, here's some good news, Chip. According to the World Bank, the sharp drop in commodity prices has ended, reducing the deflationary impact they had on global economies. With geopolitical tensions and sustained demand, especially for industrial metals crucial to the energy transition, prices have stabilized, potentially keeping interest rates higher than anticipated. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken raised concerns on Friday about China's support for Russia's military, one of many issues threatening to sour the recent improvement in relations between the two nations. Chinese officials reiterated Beijing's concerns the U.S. was suppressing its economic development.
On again, off again.
That's right.
Heat them up, cool them down. It's crazy, the relations with China.
Well, Growth Energy celebrates significant legislation that will speed investments in Nebraska's production of sustainable aviation fuel. The bill was signed by Nebraska Governor Jim Pillen and will provide a 75-cent per gallon tax credit for the production of aviation fuel that reduces life cycle emissions by at least 50%. Chip, that number calculated based on the most recent version of the GREET model there in Nebraska.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that as the free-for-all goes.
Good, good. In a split vote, the Iowa Utilities Board declined to solicit more evidence before it decides whether to issue a pipeline permit to Summit Carbon Solutions. A proposed extension of the pipeline prompted new permit requests while the initial application was still under consideration there. They don't need to see any more evidence here, Chip. Can we assume they've made some sort of decision here? What do we read from this?
It's the Iowa Utilities Board. I wouldn't assume anything, Davis.
Fair enough.
but the dots that you are connecting are accurate. Yes, mm-hmm. We should expect that. I just don't know if we can from the IUB.
Yeah. Some metals news here. Copper hit $10,000 per ton for the first time in 2 years. That's amid speculation that the world's mines will struggle to meet a coming wave of demand from green industries. Chip, there's nothing greener than the mining industry, am I right? In other news, China's gold consumption in the first quarter of 2024 jumped 5.94% from a year earlier on soaring safe haven demand. This, according to the country's gold association, buying from China's central bank continued for a 17th straight month in March. The Labor Department today announced a final rule to strengthen protections for farm workers. The rule targets vulnerability and abuses experienced by workers under the H-2A program that they say undermine fair labor standards for all farm workers in the United States.
Yeah, we need to dig into the details of that for sure.
Well, the first cargo ship has navigated through a new deep water channel in Baltimore after the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse halted maritime traffic. And from the you couldn't pay me to buy an EV file, China plans to give car owners up to nearly $1,400 to replace their old car with new ones, a move to boost slowing demand in the world's largest electric vehicle market. Chip.
Paying them to buy them. I love it.
That's right.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
So, the hog industry is studying the role of genetics in the sustainability of pork production. What have they learned so far?
Well, it's a neat process they've been going through where PIC, a genetics company, has teamed up with the National Pork Board in essence to try to develop a framework that will demonstrate the role that genetics play. Because as Chris Hostetler at Pork Board says, mm-hmm. pork producers often think about it as meat as the commodity they produce, but they really produce so much more. And so we want to find ways to see how we can get benefits for those extra things that they do, especially in this area of sustainability. Yeah. So anyway, one of the first steps is basically completing a life cycle assessment. And a recent story we just posted this week shows some of the results from PIC's first life cycle assessment that takes a look at the sustainability benefits that can be achieved through genetic improvement. And at the end of the day, all of this process is really trying to find ways to how can we put more value, how can we monetize some of these improvements that we're making, not just in genetics, but across the board in the pork industry. So this is a start of something big, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, it's been proven that there are customers for those improvements, okay? And by that, there are people that are willing to pay for improvements on GHG reductions. They're companies, they're individuals, they're willing to pay for it. If they're willing to pay for it, then we should let them pay for it.
And we've got to collect the data to show it's true. So, and that's
right.
Where I think the pork industry is ahead of some others in really getting the data figured out first.
Gotcha. Cool stuff. Thanks, Jennifer. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
You bet. Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Get more on that story and a whole lot more from the pork industry. www.porkbusiness.com. Free for all is next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, Timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. It's Friday morning, time for the free-for-all. We've got a good one here this morning. Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer joins us. How you doing, Jim?
Pretty good, Chip. I've worked a lot of hours this week on trying to find out what's going to be in that House Farm Bill. I think we have some nuggets out there on ProFarmer.com, and I'll be in Kansas City this weekend for the SEPA event and RCIS in Texas later on next week.
Wow.
Yeah.
but you were home this week, weren't you?
Thank goodness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? We've got Brian Grady, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, is going to be joining us here in a little bit. I want to wait until we can get Brian in here before we get to the Farm Bill discussion, because I want to make sure that we get his thought process and analysis in on all of that as well. Also joining us, Paul Niefer, Farm CPA. Niefer, it's good to talk to you, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I don't want to rub it in too much, but I'm in Phoenix going golfing this afternoon. So, I'm enjoying the nice weather down here.
Yep. Well, I think we're going to be dodging raindrops, hail, potentially severe storms. Looks like a rough day in the middle of the country. So, yeah. Oh, okay. I'll go along with that. I'm a little bit jealous of the weather that you got. And
My Missouri farm actually got about an inch and a half of rain yesterday, so that definitely won't hurt down there.
Yeah, no doubt. And, of course, Davis Michelson, the AgriTalk news anchor, is here and ready to go in the conversation as well. Okay, one of the more interesting news items that I saw this morning, Jim, were the comments from Blinken, Secretary of State Blinken, and the whole on again, off again, warm it up, cool it down, relations that we've got going with China. Address that for us a little bit, Jim. What in the world is going on?
Well, it's like you're playing in baseball, your arch enemy. You may talk a good game with them, but you really have skullduggery on the sidelines. We're seeing a multi-year pulling away, not totally, between the U.S. and China. Bottom line, Chip, they can talk sweet all they want, but we're moving away.
Well, and what we've seen to this point is China's willingness to, it seems, and USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack has mentioned this as well, you know, it seems as if China is in a constant state of retaliation when it comes to U.S.-Chinese policies, and that it's kind of a cool retaliation, but they're just backing away from the U.S. market.
No doubt about it. The world is dividing. Now, that's not a good sign when you look at history, Chip, on this one. But, China is going to continue to get more aggressive geopolitically, energy, you name it. And they're even putting in some of their own laws to put some more muscle in their retaliatory measures. So, I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am.
Right. You know, when the conversation about BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, or Saudi Arabia, I guess you could substitute Saudi Arabia or include it in there, BRICS. When the whole conversation about the BRICS bloc started, it was very concerning. It cooled for a while, but it's heating up again, isn't it, Jim?
Absolutely. And yeah, we've got a report out this morning that Trump's allies, his economic team, is starting to explore strategies to discourage that de-dollarization effort, Chip.
Yeah. Niefer?
I was going to say, but I guess to some degree, can you blame China a little bit? I mean, I guess I'm playing a little bit devil's advocate. You know, you have the U.S. saying, hey, you got to get rid of TikTok. If Trump gets elected, 60% tariffs, we're not going to allow you to have any chips and so on and so forth. So I guess to some degree, can you blame China for maybe backing away from the U.S. a little bit? I mean, I again, I'm playing devil's advocate.
I don't. But that's the moving away from the two leading economic, leaders of the world. And because we're seeing all the aid that they're giving Russia in the Ukraine war. So it goes both ways, ways.
It's gameplay, right? It's gameplay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And the issue at the end of all of this is Taiwan, Jim, and exactly what is going to happen going forward, whether or not Chinese President Xi decides to create another, to start a fire in an already political hotspot.
But Xi, as we speak, Chip, Xi is telling Blinken, look, you can complain what we're doing with Russia, but what are you doing with Taiwan? You're supplying them arms.
Yeah.
So, see, that's a hard one to confront.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, and Niefer, you mentioned TikTok and the potential for losing that. Where in the world are we going to get Jim Wiesmeyer dance videos if we lose TikTok?
I won't be able to go to sleep without TikTok, I'll tell you that.
Oh, I was going to say, Chip, the same place you're going to see Paul Niefer dance videos on TikTok. So.
Yeah. It's just, and you know what? I shouldn't make light of that because listen, people that are paid to pay attention to security issues and national security issues much more closely than what I am, have sounded the alarm on TikTok. Jim, it seems like it's a legitimate concern.
Yeah. Biden said yesterday he doesn't want to get rid of TikTok just to sell it to another entity. And that's probably your middle of the road. China knows that they're caught in between Republicans and Democrats going into this election. They understand that neither political party can appear weak. So maybe will change their strategy somewhat once we have our elections and know the results. So I would say they know they're in a vice right now.
Right. Okay. Let's jump to this because a couple of text messages were floating around last night on it between the Free For All team and Niefer weighed in on it this morning. You guys, Niefer, let's start with you. If former President Trump is elected this fall, does he want to have a say in what interest rates what the Fed funds rate will be?
Well, that's what it appears. He wants to, I think there's a couple things that he really would like to have the ability, and that's one, to fire the chair, Powell or whoever it might be. And then two, he wants to have a say in the direction of interest rates. And of course, for him, the direction he wants is only one way, and that's down. So that sort of, is not what the Federal Reserve was originally set up for, is to be non-political. So that's definitely what Trump would like. It reminds me a little bit of, the President Erdogan, or whatever pronounce his name, in Turkey. See how well that worked out.
Right. Yeah, that's what we need. We need to put another something as important as day-to-day business activity on the president's desk, Jim.
Well, yeah, this sounds like typical Trump posturing. The New York Times' Andrew Ross Sorkin, who's, I think, one of the best economic commentators out there, He asked three key questions. Does Trump really support these nascent proposals? Could Trump recruit a credible candidate for the Fed chair under these circumstances? And would Trump's financial backers, including that billionaire John Paulson, support these plans?
Right. You know, as far as being able to recruit a new chairman for the for the Federal Reserve, absolutely. There
are credible
candidates. Absolutely, he can find someone. I don't think that is going to be a big issue. Now, is that person probably going to have some different political ideology than what Jay Powell has? He might. He might not.
Yeah. To me, it's like when Dusty Baker was announced as a new manager of the of Houston. You know, they needed a credible candidate for manager out of their problems. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. As long as they don't let Dusty near the pitching staff, they'll probably be okay.
He won a World Series.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, they are okay, I guess.
But they're in last place right now, Jim. So
he's not there anymore. He left. That's why they're in last.
Yeah, and just lost a series to the Cubs. So here we go, off and running. All right. Speaking of off and running, that is the free for all segment one. We've got Jim Wiesmeyer, Paul Nefer, Brian Grady is going to be joining us for a markets update. Sticking around for the free for all after that.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, BHRW Wheat leading the way, seventh consecutive higher trade as of right now. If they can put together a seventh consecutive higher close, that's really something, isn't it?
Yeah, quite the impressive rally this week, Chip. And funds continue to cover short positions when you look at it from a fundamental standpoint. Forecast remains hot and dry over the next week through those west central HRW areas where it's been the driest. And in particular, Kansas is of concern because its crop is going backwards. And so that's given traders a fundamental reason to cover short positions. But, we'll see how it finishes up the week. It's heavily overbought from a short-term perspective here.
Right.
So, to see a pullback here at the end of the week wouldn't be surprising either.
Exactly. Yeah, don't let that throw you. But it's got corn trading on the plus side of unchanged.
Yeah, a little bit favoring the upside in the corn market. Not a whole lot of buyer interest there. And largely because the soybean and soy meal markets are under some pressure. Not heavy pressure by any means, but you've got wheat and beans and meal pulling corn in opposite directions.
Yeah, all right. Take us over to the livestock trade. The cattle complex has got the buyers back.
Yeah, so moderate gains in the feeders here at mid-morning, just slight gains in most of the live cattle contracts. But notably, we did see cash cattle prices firm up yesterday as much as $2 higher in the northern market. And so that's looks like it'll push the cash average up for the first time in the past month there. When all said and done. And then hog futures, they're going the opposite way, moderate to sharp losses at mid-morning.
Right. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady's going to stick around for the free-for-all, coming back in 60 seconds.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up,
and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to the Free For All here on AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. We've got Jim Wiesmeyer, Paul Niefer, Davis Michelson joining us. Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor on the Free For All. Guys, let's jump into the farm bill. There was Brian and Jim worked on a full page update, status update of what's going on in the farm bill. It's in this week's Pro Farmer newsletter. You've heard me say this before, but if you're not, get signed up for Pro Farmer and make sure that you're getting that newsletter and getting Jim's and Brian's and the rest of the editorial staff there at Pro Farmer. Get their thoughts and their opinions on what's going on. Jim, let's go to you and start us off. What's the latest, the greatest? What's the timeline on this farm bill now?
Well, we're going to get the unveiling of what we call the Chairman's Mark. That's the text, either the week of May 13th or May the 20th. And then a markup about 5 days following that, Chip.
Okay. Chairman Thompson told us on AgriTalk this week that it is still the plan to deliver the markup before, or the Chairman's Mark, before Memorial Day. So that's moving this thing forward. But, Jim, I don't know if anybody is convinced that that means we're going to get a farm bill in 2024.
No, but they need to see the details, okay? One, and we're providing more than a few nuggets. But the reason they want it before Memorial Day, Chip, is they don't want CBO to come out with a new baseline in June. That's going to happen in June. Because if they do, that's a no-no. Then you're going to be set back months, and you'll have to extend your bill another year. So that's really the reason why before June.
So Jim, if they go ahead and issue a markup and so on in May, and CBO comes out in June, so that tolls the CBO, because the CBO is still going to come out with some type of scoring, aren't they?
They will, but it'll still be based on the existing baseline.
Okay.
Yeah, once you have the text unveiled, it goes on the prevailing baseline.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and the bottom line, I'll let Beach talk too, but this is going to be a far more farmer friendly bill than I even thought, Chip.
Okay. Well, I was just going to ask Brian that. Brian, when you put your analysis on the nuggets that we do have about what's going to be in the Chairman's Mark, how do you think it's going to how's it going to play in farm country?
I think very well, and actually one of my favorite headlines I've ever written, putting farm back in farm bill in this week's newsletter. And so I think that there's a lot there for many commodities and most of the commodities. And so that's something that's been desired, you know, that it's been going more towards a nutrition bill, food bill, whatever you want to call it.
Conservation bill.
Yes. Everything but production ag, basically. So we'll see. We'll see how it all shakes out. Like I said, this is the initial proposal, and it still has a long ways to go, and there's a lot of negotiation yet to go. This is a good first step for the American producer.
And Chip, any corn producer out there, yes, you're not going to get the percentage increase as others get on the reference price, but ARC County triggers it currently 86% of the benchmark revenue and has a max payment rate of 10% of the benchmark. In the coming bill, the trigger increases to 90% and the maximum payment increases to 12.5%. I do a math table in ProFarmer.com today, and in Kossuth County, it could mean in a down price year, effectively a 25% increase in support if the world falls apart here.
Wow.
Plus that extra $40, let's say, for a typical corn growing state, that extra $40 or $50 is likely to trigger much quicker than it would under the current farm bill because of that 90% versus the 86%.
Yes. Absolutely. And on top of that, now the payment limit could, and I emphasize, could increase and be inflation indexed. But all that depends on the interaction of these ARC and PLC enhancements. I think they're still waiting on CBO scoring on this, Chip. But bottom line, wherever I look, cattle's going to get a payment in the case of, you know, the recent Texas fires. Yeah. The unborn calves were not covered. They would be covered under this legislation. Dairy's program's going to be improved. Sugar's going to have their loan rate increased. We're going to have a step up in the incentives to buy up crop insurance, and we're going to have the SCO area-wide program language that was in the recent Senator Hoeven bill. Bottom line, the key is if any Democrats on the Ag Committee during the markup vote for it. If they all vote against it, you're not going to have a bill this year.
Right.
But I cannot imagine the Democrats are going to be charged if they can't support these changes and adding in the changes to the conservation baseline and taking all the nutrition money. You know, that's like the Republicans did on immigration. They didn't know how to say yes. Yeah. You know, you get 80% of the way there, you solve a lot of problems.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. So, Jim, what is your timeline on the farm bill then?
Well, I agree. We're going to have a vote on this out of the committee by the end of May. And everybody tells me he's got to have a bipartisan vote, being he, G.T. Thompson, because he knows he's going to lose some Republican votes once it gets to the House floor. That's why you need some Democrats to vote for this thing.
Right. Yeah, he seemed cautiously optimistic that there would be the Democrat support coming out of committee for the bill. I don't know if I agree based on some of the comments from ranking member David Scott.
Yeah, we're going to see. Does he want a bill or does he want an issue?
He wants an issue.
Yeah, if he does, then you're not going to have a bill.
Right. He wants an issue because there is the potential that the House is going to come back to Democrat control, in which he would be able to put David Scott would be able to put his name on it, right?
Well, it does, but you still need 60 votes in the Senate, and good luck, because we're going to deal with the debt limit debate early March, April next year, and good luck with that. It won't be a budget neutral farm bill then. Then you'll be in worse shape.
Right.
But Jim, if it moves out of the House, is it going to get gummed up in the Senate?
That's going to be an interesting one. Stabenow has been very quiet. I've heard she's working behind the scenes on this one. Really, since she's not running for re-election, some people say her legacy is another new farm bill. I'm not quite sure on that. She's got all the nutrition money she wants in the existing legislation. Right. She's got all that new money, $18-20 billion in conservation. Right. So it'll be curious. I want to see her, not her people, her official comments eventually. Because they've been pretty silent on the Senate side.
Okay. Talk to me about base acres, Jim.
Well, in
any
this one
here?
I got to be careful how I say that because I've got some things in confidence, but you're going to add 20 to 30 million acres of base acres. Now, for beginning farmers who don't have a base and other aspects, there won't be a base update from what I can understand, but it could add a chunk of base acres. How much it's going to cost, it still depends on the CBO scoring. So I don't know what it is, but that's a significant development, Chip, because how many farm state lawmakers and farmers have said, not only beginning farmers, but in other aspects, that they need a consideration of rethinking of base acres. And it looks like some language in there in the House coming House Republican proposal deals with this.
All right. Brian Grady, when's this farm bill going to get done?
If I had to guess, I would put highest odds on next year at some point.
Okay.
I don't think we'll get her done by the end of the year, but It's just my skepticism towards Washington, I think, more than anything.
Okay.
Jim has a better read on the Washington scene than I do, so I'll defer to him on that. But
I want to see the vote.
Take longer.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Brian, but I want to see that committee vote because you need bipartisanship. So I've got to see that.
Is that even something we can do anymore in Washington? Bipartisanship.
I think you can. If you throw once with the text language behind the scenes, it appears that Ranking Member David Scott has not kept his colleagues on the Democratic side all that much informed on what's in this Republican bill. So once they see some of these figures and nuggets that we've put out, and if it's in the final text, it's going to be hard for a Democrat to vote against this. Now, you'll have those people, if you take $1 out of food stamps, won't vote for a bill. But I'm telling you, when you look across the board, sugar, specialty crops are going to be, there's going to be a special commission in FCIC on specialty crops. And I think that they've GT has done a good job of broadening the support for a coming bill.
Okay. Right. We need to take a break, you guys. When we come back, we still got some ground to cover because I want to get Brian's take on what is going on with the industry trying to trace down the HPAI H5N1 in the dairy herd. And why is the cattle market as sensitive to the news as it is?
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and the free-for-all. Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, Farm CPA Paul Niefer, Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady, Davis Michelson, me. We've covered quite a bit of ground. We've got a couple of issues that I want to get to. Brian, by the 30th, we are supposed to get the final decision on the final adjustments to the GREET model that will give us a little clarity, hopefully, on the pathway for corn-based ethanol into the sustainable aviation fuel market. How big of a deal is this?
Well, for ethanol, it's a pretty big deal. We'll see exactly what they have to do to qualify for those SAF credits. It probably isn't going to be exactly what the industry wants. In all honesty, they're probably going to have to jump through a couple hoops, so to speak, to gain those credits. But I think they will be available to some degree. And so we'll see what the announcement is next week, supposedly next week, based on what Reuters is reporting.
Yeah, you guys, we had the Farmer Forum on Wednesday, of course. Tim Burrock in Iowa, Mike Appert up in North Dakota. And the whole conversation kind of zeroed in on the Brazilian sugar cane ethanol making its way into the U.S. and heading to the sustainable aviation fuel market. Just a real disappointment from Tim and Mike both that we're not handing the market over to sugarcane-based ethanol out of Brazil. But it seems like the rules and regulations are going to be making it more difficult to get corn-based ethanol in there, Jim.
Well, and it's because we're acting like a dinosaur. We can't turn around fast enough. And that's other countries can you know, take advantage of us. You know, how long has USDA Secretary Vilsack told farmers that this area is going to be their next revenue stream? Okay, let's have the proof, Mr. Secretary. What I'm starting to hear from farmers is not good news for Vilsack, I'll tell you that. And if this is too negative for that corn-based ethanol, that criticism is going to grow of Vilsack, let alone all the negative comments I hear on his focus on equity issues and not on production agriculture. To the degree, Chip, that some producers are telling me, USDA and EPA is probably contributing to sticky inflation from not focusing on supporting the U.S. farmer, production agriculture, and taking their time on some biofuel initiatives. We could have higher prices had they not been dragging their feet rather than focusing on equity issues.
Yeah, they're getting serious. Yes. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And the issues are real. The issues are real. Brian, Colombia did put some restrictions on imports of U.S. beef because of the presence of the HPAI, H5N1 bird flu virus in dairy herds. I guess that's just a kind of extreme caution is the reason that they've put those restrictions in place. But the beef market, the cattle market, live cattle market, seems very sensitive to the news that's coming out of the dairy industry with the bird flu virus, right?
Absolutely. Even though nothing has been shown up in the beef herd yet, and we don't know that it will, but there's no news on that front. But the market has been very knee-jerkish to any kind of news on the dairy front, and so I think that's pretty telling in terms of, you know, they're almost anticipating that there will be some negative news at some point in time. Those knee-jerk reactions is a precursor of what would happen if there is confirmation in the beef herd.
Yeah, yeah. Jim, you want to talk about USDA catching some criticism? They're really catching some criticism on not getting in front of this. And it appears that it is much more widespread through the U.S. dairy herd than what USDA's APHIS has indicated.
It just goes into some of the things I said before, Chip, the lack of focus on the really important issues rather than the sidebar equity issues. And I know Vilsack would get very upset that, but that's what I'm hearing. Now, I'm going to let others lead on this one. But some of the things I'm hearing, I don't like what I'm hearing, but I'm not going to report them. I'll just tell you that.
Well,
on this issue.
Yeah, I think we've talked about some of them on the show already. And one of the things that concerns me the most is that it sounds like, and this was in a report that was written by Rhonda Brooks on agweb.com, but it sounds like some farm workers, some dairy workers,
yes,
have been showing some symptoms of having the virus on dairies down in Texas. If that's the case and it's going unreported, we can't have that. We need accurate reporting of this in order to get in front of it and to have any hope of trying to corral this thing. Niefer, what are your thoughts here?
Well, I'm not a scientist, but the more that you quote hide stuff, if they are hiding stuff, you know, eventually, whether it's an environmental group or somebody else is going to start beating the drum on it. So I think you're right. You need to be out in front of it and communicate what's going on.
Yeah. This is a tough one. This really is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, an FDA yesterday said that 1/5 of all commercial milk samples have the virus in them, particles of the virus. So that would indicate that it's more widespread and started sooner than what we're led to believe at this point in time.
Here's an email I just got. Hearing some big things are potentially coming from USDA today on all of this. No details.
Okay. So we need to stay up on that. All right. You guys, great job today. Thank you so much for being part of the free-for-all. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady, Paul Niefer, Farm CPA. Davis is along as well. Come back this afternoon. We're going to have a conversation with Dan Huber from the Huber Report right here on AgriTalk.